This is the Side Hustle Show with Nick Loper, episode 21.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
Hey, everybody. Happy Thursday. Nick Loper here. Welcome to another edition of the Side Hustle Show. This is episode 21. We have Jim Wang in the house to tell us all about how he built a seven-figure blog starting as a side hustle. Bargaineering.com is a personal finance site, and actually that's how we connected. I left a comment on a post Jim had written on various side hustle ideas. He decided to reach out to me, and here we are. So all the links for this episode are at sidehustlenation.com/episode21. And before we get started, one quick shout to Rob CRG for the 5-star iTunes review. He says, "This show rocks. I always learn something I feel like I can go take action on immediately." That's what it's all about. Thank you so much for that. And now let's get Jim on the line. Jim Wang is founder of Bargaineering.com, a personal finance blog that sold for a reported $3 million in 2010. His latest project is Microblogger.com, a site that aims to help other bloggers earn as much as they can from their sites. Now, Jim is joining us today on, I'm sure, what is very little sleep, as he just welcomed a newborn daughter into the world last week. Jim, welcome to the Side Hustle Show.
Thank you. Thank you. And now that I'm on, I'm not tired. I'm invigorated.
Invigorated.
I'm ready to go. Yes.
That's awesome. Let's start off with your kind of quick background, how you got started online.
Okay. So my background is actually in software engineering. And so I've always had an interest in computers since I was, you know, a little kid. And, you know, I went to school, studied computer science, graduated, started working in the defense industry. And interestingly enough, I never thought that I would start, first of all, any business, let alone one, you know, entirely online. And the genesis of it was basically, you know, you start working and there are so many of these personal finance concepts that you're never taught. Your parents, my parents didn't talk to me about IRAs and 401ks and all these other acronyms that get thrown out at you. I mean, they mentioned it briefly that retirement was important, but the actual nuts and bolts, no one ever talks about it because, I mean, it's pretty boring.
Right.
So I thought, oh, why don't I have to start reading about it. And I figured the easiest way for me to do this is to try to journal it. And, you know, WordPress had just come out, you know, it was probably like version 1.5 or 2 or whatever. I was like, oh, this is a fun tool I can use. I can keep my journal notes online. I can read them while I'm at work and read, you know, write them at home when I'm reading through all these boring books about, you know, personal finance.
Okay.
That's just sort of how things started.
So it was completely unrelated to your day job as a defense contractor, basically, or software engineering for a defense contractor.
Yeah. I was writing code for radar systems.
Okay.
Nothing to do with the blog.
Nothing to do with saving for retirement.
Exactly.
So it started out as a part-time gig, and you're just journaling for your own sake. And that's similar to Pat Flynn's story with the Green Exam Academy site, right? Where it's like, hey, I'm going to study for this lead exam. I'm going to just put my notes online so they'll all be in one place. And then he finds out, you know, a year and a half later that, you know, thousands of people are visiting the site each day. Now, did you have a similar story on that front?
It wasn't thousands. I mean, in the beginning, being an engineer, I think I always wanted to be able to have a sense of progress. And so I'd installed SiteMeter to sort of get a sense. Was there anybody else looking at it? I didn't really do any promotion or anything. I just kept the journal and you know, maybe told my friends about it.
SiteMeter is like a precursor to Google Analytics.
Yeah, it still exists.
Okay.
And it's like Stack Counter. It's, you know, one of those free little widget things that you put on and it tells you how many people visit. It's not really very comprehensive.
Okay.
But back in the day, that was, I mean, unless you wanted to go in and look at your server logs, use Stack Counter and those sorts of things. Yeah. I didn't have a sort of Pat Flynn. One day I decided to put on analytics and there are 1,000 other people in this room with me. No, it was just me. I joke. Used to have 3 readers: me from home, me at work, and my girlfriend. And so the 3 of us, we'd show up on the site every day.
So what did you do? Like about how long did it take to kind of gain some initial traction? You said you weren't working on marketing it per se, but how did it build up a readership?
Well, so I guess I should say I didn't actively or intentionally really do any marketing for it. What I ended up doing is something that a lot of bloggers now suggest that you do, is you do outreach with other bloggers. And back then, personal finance, there were at most maybe 10 other bloggers that now a lot of them I'm become really good friends with. And you would go and you'd read, you know, what would end up happening is you do a search for a term or something that you didn't really understand. You'd find another blog and then, oh, you'd leave a comment. You'd email the blogger. And back then, a lot of personal finance sites would be appearing, you know, in the search results. And so I would just build friendships that way.
Okay.
So comments, emails, things like that.
Hmm. And so eventually that built, this was like 2005, 2006 timeframe?
Yep, that's right.
So in terms of monetizing the site, was this something that you tried to earn dollars off of right away, or kind of walk us through the monetization process?
So this was actually, whereas Pat Flynn sort of had his epiphany when he put on analytics and saw so many people at his Green Academy, for me it was one day I'm looking around, and so I see the Commission Junction affiliate links, and they always go to servers with like a bunch of random letters like K, Q, Z, Z, G, Y, whatever. Uh-huh. And so I'm like, what is this link? This looks weird. I've never seen a domain name that was just gibberish before.
Okay.
And so I start looking around. I start poking. And, you know, unless you put in the right parameters, it doesn't actually go anywhere. So I did a who is. And eventually, I don't know how I figured it out, but I figured out it's Commission Junction. And I went, Commission Junction, look at the site. I'm like, oh, affiliate advertising. What's this? And it turns out, you know, people will pay you a commission when you send them leads or they buy something or whatever. And between that and AdSense, I was like, oh, you can actually make money on the internet this way. Because, you know, until you know, it's hard for quote unquote regular people, like people who aren't thinking about this all the time, to even consider that this is how money is made online. Because offline, very few people generate income through commissions, right? They go to work, they do a job, and someone pays them. Only salespeople get paid on commission. Like only, you know, there are only certain groups of individuals. And so the vast majority of people who aren't in those fields don't think I can get paid this way.
Right, right.
So it's sort of like an epiphany for me learning that I could do this. Then, you know, you start seeing AdSense and you realize, oh, you know, I guess this was 8 years ago, 8, 9 years ago. A lot more people were doing sort of the arbitrage thing of, you can run an ad for a company, for, you know, a third-party company, and whenever someone would click through, hit your affiliate link, apply for a credit card or something, you can earn a commission. And this was before, you know, the various affiliate companies became savvier and said, oh, you can't bid on these keywords because now, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. So that probably doesn't work so well anymore.
No, it's impossible now. You can't do it now.
Okay.
But back then, it was big business. And, you know, just learning about it was that epiphany moment for me.
Okay. Did, you know, for Bargaineering, was there any like grand vision or long-term goal for the site?
There was no long-term goal. It was just a journal. And what happened was, I think the big milestone moment for the blog itself was at around October, I think, of 2005. I was featured in the New York Times, because back then a lot of personal finance sites or bloggers, they would share sort of their net worth, how much they were spending and budgeting and things like that.
Okay.
And so I did it because everyone else was doing it. And the New York Times was like, oh, that's interesting. You're being so open. We want to interview you, take photos. And I remember that day when the story was published, it was a Sunday, and it was funny. Someone in the that later on I was talking to, and so like the journalism ministry, they're like, oh yeah, that's the Sunday puff piece. I'm like, that's awesome. I don't care.
Whatever. It's the New York Times. Now, did they come? They came knocking on your door, or did you reach out to them? Yeah,
they reached out to me.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. It was incredible. And so that day, I don't know how many visitors there were, but I remember in AdSense, I made $80 in a single day.
One day. Okay.
Yeah. And to that point, it hadn't even made, you know, the $20 that you needed to get over the $100 threshold to get an AdSense check.
To even get paid.
Yeah. And I was like, this is amazing. I'm actually making money doing this. And I'm having more fun because, I mean, I don't know. Some people get energized over different things. And I thought, oh, this could actually be a business and not just a journal. and this is mine. Like all of my work, even though I was putting in a lot of time at this point, you know, 5-6 months in, you know, I never really thought that it could be a business.
Okay.
And so between that, figuring out affiliates and advertising, I started to think, okay, I wonder if I could turn this into something pretty big.
Okay, that's a great light bulb moment. The combination of the press exposure and the advertising. Now, did those visitors from the New York Times end up sticking around?
I don't know, because I wasn't tracking.
Okay.
I didn't have an email list. I don't have anything. The traffic stayed certainly not at that level, but stayed elevated around that for a couple more weeks before sort of settling back down.
Okay. So it was reaching out to, we'll kind of go back into the traffic strategy. So reaching out to other bloggers in the personal finance area, which is huge now, but at the time maybe was not as big. And then were you getting traction in the search results for certain terms at that point too, or was it mostly through word of mouth?
It was mostly through word of mouth. Okay. It wasn't through, because in thinking back, knowing what I know now, there was no sort of link building strategy. I mean, everything was just, you know, comments, and people were visiting because they saw leave a hopefully insightful comment on another blog. So they come through and then they'd see it. You know, they had RSS. So, I mean, I guess there was pickup in the RSS subscribers. I don't remember how much. It was just, I would just hit the same. These were my friends, quote unquote, and my internet friends.
Yeah.
I'd go to their sites every day, see what they're up to, leave comments. We'd email back and forth. It wasn't until maybe a year in that the idea of, well, two things. One was guest posting. And this was, you know, as most people understand it now, to just get exposure to another audience that may or may not be familiar with your site.
Okay.
Two, it was really the only link building strategy I ever employed for the life of the site.
It was only guest posting.
Okay. And, you know, it's effective because you get access to a different platform, hopefully a bigger one. And it doesn't necessarily have to be bigger. It just has to be different enough with a limited amount of overlap. So you do reach someone new. And it's sort of a longer form way than a comment. Because, I mean, very few people read comments in the first place.
Right.
So,
any best practices for pitching other, you know, maybe bigger, more influential sites on guest posting?
So the only strategy... It's tricky to pitch sites that are significantly larger unless you can come up with a story that's so unique or an angle that's so interesting that they can't say no. I've often found that the most effective ways to do it is to sort of find people that might be as new as you and start there and then grow your influence. And as you get bigger and bigger, try to reach out to the more popular sites.
Okay.
Because the problem is they're going to be inundated with requests, especially now that sort of the guest post as a link building strategy is something that is well known, has been known for a couple of years. You'll have random Gmail accounts that will email a big blogger and say, "Hey, love your site." They'll reference some recent post. "We'd love to write something for you about that subject."
Yeah.
And that'll be, and those are shotgunned out. And the problem is you may not be approaching it that way, but now you have to rise above all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And so that becomes very difficult.
Yeah, I get a bunch of crap for guest posts. And it's like, my site isn't even very big. And it's just like, you know, this isn't relevant at all to the content of the site. Like, you didn't do your research at all. Like, spend 2 minutes and just figure it out. But it's frustrating. So I can see what you're talking about there.
Yeah. And I find that it's good to try to build a relationship before you even suggest a guest post, because it's just, I mean, that's how people do it in real life. Like, I won't call you up and on the first day say, "Can I come over for dinner?"
Yeah.
Or even, "Can I come over and cook you dinner?" You don't want me to come over and cook you dinner, right? Like, you want to figure out whether or not I'm a scumbag first. And hopefully you decide I'm not a scumbag and you want to hang out, and I'll come over with a six pack and we'll order some pizza and we'll hang out.
Right.
But you don't do that on the first day.
So Robert Farrington was on the show a couple of months ago, and he runs the College Investor, another personal finance site. And he joked, like, there's only like six topics that personal finance people like ever talk about. And I forget what the six were, but, you know, it was like saving for retirement, investing, you know, managing your money, whatever it was. And so I was curious, like, how you were able to maintain 5 years worth of content or 8 years worth of content, however long it's been, you know, around these six topics and trying to make it fresh, you know, with each new post.
So it's, yeah, that's something. I think the first time I heard it, Liz Weston joked about it, and she's a far more prolific personal finance writer than basically anyone I've ever known.
Okay.
So the reality is there are only six stories. Maybe they're 10, maybe they're 12, whatever it is. It's not a very large number. The problem is how it impacts an individual is going to be different each time, right? So, you know, you take a common story about credit scores, anything about credit scores. Well, you're going to have a very specific situation than me. It's going to be different than mine. It's going to be different than the other person. And so there's always going to be some sort of angle or some sort of specificity to the post that will make it different. Now, if you're always going to write about the six ways to quickly boost your credit score, yeah, there might be six ways, seven ways, eight ways, but it's still the same generic post.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to figure out how to help someone do it because they want to buy a house soon, or they want to buy a car, or they want to, or they just care that their credit score is a higher number than it was yesterday, then those posts are going to be different. The way that I always wrote things was based on what I was interested in. And I think it goes back to it being a journal. As I, quote unquote, grew up over 8 years, the things that interested me changed. And so I just chose topics that I cared about. And so people have asked me, oh, what was your target market for your blog? I said, me.
Yeah, okay. I think that's great. So it's really just, you know, writing, like you said, as a journal for yourself. And, you know, as you grow up along with your audience, you know, they become interested in different things. Like, hey, you know, maybe at 22, I'm not necessarily interested in, you know, joint finances with my partner. But, you know, come 5 years later, maybe that's an issue, or, you know, saving for buying a house, whatever it is. Now that makes sense.
And what's funny is you don't realize how much you change over 8.5 years. Unless you go back and you read the stuff and you're like, oh, that's the sort of things I was interested in. And things definitely change. You know, joint finances matter to me a lot more than they did 10 years ago.
Yeah. I love it. So how long did it take before you felt comfortable quitting your job with the income from the site?
This is a question that I've actually never told anybody else. But by the day that I quit, the site was making like six times more than my day salary.
Wow.
Than my day job. Like, that's how long it took. Like, I'm surprisingly risk averse.
Okay.
Like, I don't think I'm surprisingly risk averse, but I actually am, because my salary was 1/6 and I was spending 9 to 10 hours. And granted, you know, I'd liked the job. It was a challenge. It was fun interacting with people and working on big projects. And so that part I derived a lot of, you know, joy and value out of. But it got to the point where, you know, I'm spending 3-4 hours at night and it's doing a lot better than my day job, where I'm spending 8, 9, 10 hours. And I got, you know, I just decided, if this goes away one day, I'm going to be very upset with myself if I was still at work, you know, at a day job for the vast majority of my waking hours. Plus, it was my most high quality hours. You know, my first 8 to 10 are going to be better than my last 4.
How come you think it took so long to get up the nerve to quit when it was making that kind of money?
It's all about mindset. My mindset, ever since I was a kid, and this is something, you know, my parents ingrained in me, is you go to school. This is classic Asian parents. You go to school, you get good grades, you go to a good college, you get good grades in college, you go to work. You work, you raise a family, you retire, you look back, you go, I did a good job, wonderful kids, good job, you know, good life, good wife, then you die.
Yeah.
Which is, if you, on average, if that was your life, you'd be thrilled, right? So I'm like, what? Why am I quitting my job?
Right. It doesn't follow the script anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't follow the script. All this other, like, it's bonus. I should just treat it as bonus and always have my baseline as a job. And then everything's all out of whack because the site's making way too much money. Like, it's making too much. Like, it's making me break the system that I was taught ever since as a kid.
Wow, that's a rough problem to have.
I don't want to sound like I'm complaining. It's just, you know, it's very hard to overcome that.
Yeah. So at this point, it was earning money, like you said, from AdSense and from affiliate offers, like for credit cards and stuff?
For credit cards, banks, like credit scores. They're all basically financial.
Okay. Now, so let's kind of move forward a little bit. So now you're working on Bargaineering full time. Now, are you still writing every single article yourself, or you kind of have a team of writers at this point?
I was writing everything myself.
Wow.
I look back and I don't know how I did it. It was at its peak, 3 articles a day.
Oh my God. Wow.
It had a 7 o'clock, a 12 o'clock, and then like a shorter 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock one.
Wow. I can barely come up with content like a couple times a week. That's insane.
I'm a fast typer.
Yeah, you'd have to be. God, you should. I mean, you could compile all that into a massive book if you wanted to.
I could if there were a better organizational structure than whatever interested me at the time.
Yeah, that's nuts. Wow. Okay. So the site sold in 2010, like we talked about. Mm-hmm. And that's just awesome. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
But you ended up staying on and working there for another 2 or 3 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the advantage of doing that?
I really liked the company. I mean, I liked the leadership. I liked the people that I was working with. And so it was a good environment. The other thing was there were like contractual obligations to meet out, but I stayed on well beyond those obligations. And yeah, it was a good company and I was still enjoying it. That's not to say after I left, I wasn't enjoying it, but you know, after a certain while, it was 8.5 years, sort of just felt like it was time to move on.
Yeah. That's a long time to be on any one project.
Yeah. And also ran out of, I mean, I'd run through the 6 stories about 600 times.
three times a day for 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so near the end, the last 2 or 3 years, I did bring on outside writers.
Okay.
Actually, the company that acquired Bargaineering helped bring on outside writers.
Okay.
Because I was just running, dry.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I think that's a good transition into Microblogger, your next project, and we can get to talking about, you know, because 2005, 2006 is such a completely different world when it comes to blogging and online marketing and earning money online. So what would you do differently in terms of launching and marketing and monetizing a site? And I guess it's not so much hypothetically because you're really doing it.
Yeah. So here's the big difference. You remember, I forget when Demand Media and eHow, you know, all those content farm types of sites came out and they were doing really well because they were essentially sort of assembly line blogs. And that's because back in the day, if you had a bunch of links and a, you know, solid, let's say PageRank as a proxy for, you know, your strength and rankings in Google, if you had a good PageRank, you could put out some long tail term and you could almost immediately get traffic for it. I remember Bargaineering, I would just do some keyword research, come up with something that I thought sounded good, didn't have much competition. I would write it and it would just pop up and appear. And that was a strategy that I, you know, rinse, repeat, keep doing it, keep collecting checks. And it was great.
So you mean with no links to that specific page, but because the domain itself had authority,
correct,
it would rank.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
And competition was low enough and I made guesses on whether or not it could generate either simply AdSense revenue or I could promote some sort of product as a resource. It was ranking pretty well. Okay. And these were long tail terms that I had to guess that they were valuable.
Okay.
The thing is, after Demand Media and all them came out and people started complaining about content farms and the quality of search being poor, Google adjusted their algorithms. So now it's not as easy. Back in the day, I remember people would just spam blog carnivals and get links. These would be on pages. They would be on pages with like 100 links. And that was enough to get, you know, your site ranked for some of these intermediate to long tail terms. I think nowadays, in terms of getting traffic, you really need to sort of go the branding route. You need to build real relationships and not rely on, you know, a nameless site that just happens to have, you know, a bunch of links from back in the day. It's harder now for one person to run like 10 blogs and do well with it. I think you really need to just nail down one, put your face on it, go out and have everything you do be related to that site, building links, you know, building up social metrics, as you know, arguably as useless as they may or may not be. I mean, those are all measures that are useful.
Yeah, you're right. They're getting much smarter about, you know, the quality of links coming to the site. You know, is a real person behind this with their you know, authorship markup. Yep. And everything like that. So what's the end game or what's the goal with Microblogger?
So what I realized was I was, you know, having phone calls and meeting with people and just talking about blogging because they wanted my sage advice for whatever that's worth.
Right. Yeah. It's, you built a seven figure site.
Yeah. And I was saying kind of the same things over and over again. And partially I was probably going to leave Bargaineering. So I needed an outlet. I mean, I was writing 3 articles a day for so many years. I need to write at least once a week and do something. But I wanted to also remain sort of in the mix of things in terms of just thinking about it and you know, just trying to grow and learn instead of just sitting around and sort of doing nothing. And I think that I've learned a lot over the years. Even though blogging has changed, I've learned a lot that I think I can share with other people that'll be useful. And granted, back in the day when I could sort of have Bargaineering be a light content farm, things were easier. But nowadays, if you're willing to put in the work, you can stand out. I mean, Pat Flynn didn't exist a few years ago.
Right.
He existed.
True.
He was fine. But I mean, he didn't exist sort of as a force as he does today.
Right, right.
And that's because I don't know him. I think we've traded a couple of emails. But you could tell he puts a lot of energy and emotion and heart into what he's doing. This isn't someone that pays $15 for a 600-word article, posts it with some keyword optimization, and says, I'm done. It's time to work on one of the other 50 blogs that I own.
No, he writes 3,000-word posts that are very personal stories.
They're very personal. They're very actionable. They're useful. You know, instead of writing, you know, 10 articles all niched down to each one to one specific subject, he puts it all in a comprehensive resource that you're probably going to bookmark and go back when you want to go look at it.
Yeah. So that's the difference between
pages on his site, and I don't bookmark pages ever.
Yeah. And that's the difference between 2013 and 2005 is, yes, it's just a difference in the content strategy itself. So you can't create 3 of those articles every day. It might take just one a week. But I think that's a very good distinction to make.
I think what the big difference now is also that you have social media. And social media, and by that, you know, Facebook, Twitter, you can't trick it. You can trick Google into thinking your page is valuable, or you used to be able to in 2005. And granted, it probably was valuable in order for them to be tricked, but it wasn't the most valuable page on the subject. With social media, you can't trick someone into sharing it unless they actually like it, unless they find it valuable. And unless your face is there, unless they know it's a human being and not someone somewhere else pumping out content, I mean, they're not going to share it.
Right.
And you need people to share it.
Definitely. So that kind of leads into the next question is does the world, when we're talking a little bit about podcasting before, but does the world need another blog about blogging?
The world does not need another blog about blogging, but I need another blog about blogging. And that's, I mean, all joking aside, I needed a place to share my thoughts. And my hope is that the people that read it find it valuable enough to keep reading it. I mean, the world didn't need, you know, a software engineer with no financial background writing about personal finance. But what it did need, at least I would like to think so, is someone who can share sort of their learning process and learn along with me. And in this case, granted, I'm not learning necessarily about blogging from an absolute sense, but every day I learn something new.
Right.
So sort of we can grow together.
I like that. I like that analogy too. Hey, you know, I wasn't a personal finance expert, but you know, over time I became one, and it was my personal journey. So I think that's a really good one. So do you think blogging is a good side hustle?
So you told me it wasn't.
Yeah, I don't think it is. but I'm curious to hear your. We can talk about it a little bit.
Like anything else in this world, I think it depends. What's nice about blogging is that it's sort of like low impact. It won't disrupt your life, and it's not particularly hard, but it's also easy to fail. It's easy to sort of sit back and say, okay, I'm not gonna hustle, I'm not gonna work as hard, because I think I need to wait a little bit for it to gain traction in social media or to gain, you know, search ground and things like that. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of competition. You can do well. I mean, I guess I'm proof that you can do well, but I mean, like you said, it's just not, I don't know if it makes a good one. Thinking back on it, and maybe you poisoned my mind.
Sorry about that.
No, it's fine, because I mean, you want to pick something that you feel passionate about, and not a lot of people are passionate about writing, and blogging is primarily writing. I was a terrible writer, and so fortunately I was a very fast typer, so I could work through my inability to write by being able to type really fast and use Word spell check and grammar. But if you have to do that and you're trying to, let's say you have a particular subject that you're very passionate about and you want to write about it, but you're not a good writer. Like it's, there's so many things that you have to overcome. You have to learn WordPress. You have to do all the technical things. Then you have to write. Then you have to do marketing. Like it's, it may not be the best thing for you, but right. It seems and easy. And so a lot of people pick it up and they're like, oh, blocking is easy. I can write.
Yeah. The barrier to entry is pretty low, which I like. There's no, you know, not a huge investment required, which I like. And for me, I like the, you know, the practice of writing and that's kind of like an outlet for me. But as far as blogging without a clear monetization strategy, like if you're blogging about, you know, it has to be a topic that there's some money in the market for it to ever be to be a real business. And a blog, I think that's kind of a mistake a lot of people make. The blog is not the business. Like, unless you have millions and millions of page views and you can earn, you know, AdSense dollars, a few pennies a click or whatever it is. So I'm not super high on blogging as a side hustle. And there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of examples of people who've made it work. But for me, I'm a slow writer. It's very time intensive and it doesn't earn a ton of dollars, but it can feed other businesses. It can feed a non-blog business, which I really, really like.
The other thing that's also tricky about blogs is you don't know when you failed, unlike another business.
Yeah, you never know. Oh, maybe that wave of traffic is next week, is next month. And so you keep plugging away.
You open up a store, and if no one comes in after a month, you're shutting down the store.
Yeah.
Chances are. I mean, I blogged. I started in January. The New York Times thing was in October, you know, nine months.
Yeah.
If 8 or 9 months, the only people shopping in my store were like my parents, a couple of my friends, and my girlfriend. Like, store's done after 3 months. But because it wasn't something that I was considering my side hustle and I didn't have to make money, I just sort of piddled along. I didn't treat it seriously. And I think if you want to succeed in anything that you're doing, whether it's a side hustle, your primary job, anything, you have to be serious about it. And a blog is just so easy to start and so easy to abandon that you don't have to treat it seriously, and that shouldn't be how you're approaching anything really in life, but let alone something that you're hoping to turn into something bigger.
Yeah, somebody posted that recently. It was like, starting a blog is not the hard part, it's keeping it going.
Yeah.
And figuring out how to turn it into something viable for sure. So what's next for you?
I think I'm just going to keep working on Microblogger, see what else is out there. It's definitely an outlet for my creative needs. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do next. But for now, it'll be Microblogger.
Cool.
If I can say it correctly.
Any monetization strategy on that site yet?
Nothing yet.
Okay.
I think I'll figure something out.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think the thing that I see most people do is promote hosting packages and other various affiliate things.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. For now, I just want – part of it's also when someone emails me, I can send them a post instead of typing out the same email over and over again. So they're time savings, and that's a monetization strategy.
That's worth something for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to wrap things up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation, and then leave us with where people can find you and connect with you online.
All right. My number one tip for Side Hustle Nation is the most important thing that you can do to grow anything is any business, I should say, is your personal network, whether it's other business owners like family. Every successful person that I've ever met has had a very powerful personal network or business network or any sort of network built on these social engagements and relationships. If you're going to do anything, focus on that and chances are you'll do well. If nothing else, you'll have a lot of friends, which is not a bad thing.
I love it. I love it. Go ahead.
As for where to find me, what should I tell them to find me?
Microblogger.com, or, you know, if people want to find you on Twitter or something.
Yeah. If you want to find, all right, I'm assuming you're going to edit this out or leave it in. It'll be anything. You can find me on microblogger.com. I'm also on Twitter as Wangarific, WANGARIFIC. I'm a nice guy. Say hello. I'll say hi back.
Awesome. We'll link to all that stuff in the show notes. Jim, thanks so much for joining us. I think I will leave that in. It is entertaining.
Yeah. All right. I appreciate it, Nick.
All right. Talk to you soon. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
So what do you think? Is blogging a good side hustle? Now, I don't mean to make it sound like I'm anti-blogging, because obviously I'm pretty into it myself. And this may sound uncharacteristically pessimistic for the show, but I would hesitate to start a blog if your goal is to make money. To be fair, there are plenty of other reasons to start a blog. Like for me, it's, you know, a great practice for writing and learning WordPress and all that stuff. But look at Jim's story. Like, he started out as a personal financial journal. He started Bargaineering as a personal financial journal and then found the monetization strategies that fit later. I think so much depends on what you intend to blog about. A personal blog, you know, without much focus, will be lucky if it ever pays for your domain and hosting. Like, there's no way that could be considered like a viable side hustle business. But obviously, a site targeted around personal finance or some other, you know, well-defined niche has some advertising opportunity and a wide audience of people who are interested in that topic. Now, for me, blogging, like I said, has been an amazing creative outlet. It's giving me this opportunity to connect with a ton of great people from all around the world, but it's really not a business in and of itself, at least not yet anyways. But what do you think? Let me know in the comments at sidehustlenation.com/episode21, or send me a note. I'm nick@sidehustlenation.com. And that's it for our show. Until next time, go out there and make something happen, and I'll see you next week in episode 22.
Thanks for listening to The Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.